Hello and welcome to the show. I am Martin Willis, your host, and this is Podcast UFO. I always forget to say that. You were expecting probably a different show because we had a show scheduled today with Roberto, that is, Pignatti of Italy. Somehow things got crossed, and anyway, he just wasn't available. And when you're dealing with someone that's international, I tried for over a week trying to make sure this would work. So I had a lot of time into it. It didn't work. And so I scrambled, and I was very lucky to get Alejandro Rojas to come in for the first part of the show so we can have a show, actually. And then Mac Maloney, repeat guest Mac Maloney, is always a character and always fun to have on. He's going to be on in the second part of the show. If you're supporting the show, I want to thank you so much. Anyone can do that, even on YouTube or the Dark Matter Digital Network, anywhere. All you have to do is go to podcastufo.com and sign in at the support the show bar. And so that, I think, is it. And we're ready to roll with my guest for the first part, Alejandro. Good to see you. And thanks for filling in these the shoes of the guy that didn't show up.
My pleasure, my friend.
Yeah. So it's been a, let's see, last week you weren't on because, and the week before you weren't on. So you've had a little bit of gap. So
did you have a show last week?
I did. It was a pre-recorded.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so it's been a couple of weeks. We made it through the UFO Congress. That went well. A lot of good feedback from a lot of people about all that. And so let's just talk about how that went. I thought it went just absolutely great.
It went very well.
That's it, isn't it? That's all you're going to say.
Yes, it did go well. I felt... luckily, we had a lot of people there, surprisingly, and you know, I don't know if anybody noticed this, nobody's commented, which is interesting. I noticed this big time, but others don't seem to as much. We didn't have as much press coverage. Usually I have, you know, a little piece from every television station in the Phoenix area to share with people on our Facebook and everything, but we did have some of the TV stations out there, but they didn't really film much. Interestingly enough, we did get some footage on luckily AZ Central, which is the website for the Arizona Republic, which is a big newspaper out here. The newspaper covered us quite a bit, and she came in, and the reporter, who I think was an intern actually, she asked a couple questions during the Travis Walton panel, and then they went backstage and she filmed this short little interview with Travis, and she wrote a great story about that. But luckily, that didn't seem to have any effect on attendance, except for, who knows, maybe we would have had more, but it was packed. It was really full, standing room only for you know, Friday and Saturday. And even throughout the week, it was really a packed house. So, and a lot of the speakers did a great job with their presentations, and so it was a fun week.
Did you say the reason why the press wasn't there? Wasn't it because of the rain?
Yeah. So, which is funny. If it rains in Phoenix, that's the big news. And they often say that. They say, we'll be there unless it rains. Because it rarely rains out here. So when it does rain, I guess it's just kind of like if there's a major blizzard, you know, in where you live or something like that. That's all the news is how, because it's directly affecting people's lives. So what's going on here and there. I mean, we didn't have anything big like flooding or anything like that. But yeah, we had some rain the first couple of days, and I think that kind of stymied things from the beginning. But luckily, we still had a great time and everything went well. So yeah, pretty funny.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that came up when I was doing the roundtable, and it just basically is this, it seemed like it was very full, and it also seemed like perhaps some people that were always had, you know, some type of interest in the UFO phenomena maybe are more people are interested since, you know, the article came out in December. I mean, it just seemed like there were a lot of new people. What was your take on that? Do you ask people at the door if they're new as far as coming?
Well, no, not we don't ask at the door, but we do ask, or at least sometimes people will ask. And in this case, I know Michael Carter asked, and I think one other speaker asked, you know, how many were new. Michael Carter was the first day, and there was something like a quarter of the hands. And he said, how many of you, this is a first, you know, UFO conference like this you've been to? And about a quarter of the room raised their hand. So that was a lot. And I think that's one of the things that we do well is we get a lot of new people. Last year, I know I asked during my talk, and it was around 30% of the people. So we always have a pretty high percentage. I mean, that's a lot of people. You know, out of 1,000 people in the room, you know, that's a couple hundred, 200-300 people. And then a lot of those people come back regularly. So, and then, of course, there's your people who are into this topic that come around, you know, every few years, too. So I think, I don't know, this year, I guess there was maybe a slight increase in newbies. But And I would imagine it was from that story. We certainly had more kind of curious people who just showed up because of the Elizondo story and just because they were curious. So
right.
And the conference is a good place for it because, you know, there's people get interested in a wide variety of different topics in this field. Maybe some of the topics aren't ones that I'm into, but so and our conference, luckily, we run the gamut. We show, you know, people doing stuff right now, all the way from the nuts and bolts to the fringe. And so people get a good taste of, you know, the kind of the breadth of topics out there.
Yeah, that's right. And behind the scenes, I was helping out, which was actually a lot of fun. You have a great crew that. We're going to throw an image of you up. I took a picture of you when you were up on a scissor lift. So that's up now. And then there's always the repairing of the equipment that was happening. We found like a gear tooth broken in something and then a wire broken in something else. So we're it's a lot. People don't realize how much work it actually is to set up something like this. And I know you've been doing it for many, many years and you're just probably used to it, but when someone walks into it, it's like, wow, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of people will say that. It seems like it's you know, seamless and everything's working the way it is. Behind the scenes, there's fires we got to put out on a regular basis, always. And so, like you said, you know, equipment was breaking and we've got to fix it. And we've got to do it in a manner where the people on the other side of the curtain don't notice it at all, that they're still having a great experience and they're not affected at all. And so that's the challenge. And that's what makes it certainly an adrenaline rush, you know, that week. I'm sure you felt that too, to go troubleshoot those issues and get them taken care of so nobody notices. And then, you know, in some cases, and for me, this was the case somewhat, the learning curve, because you know, we used to have Michael Klein, who is just, you know, he does TV high quality video stuff. And so he's very familiar with all the video equipment. But I was kind of had to take charge of the AV this year because Michael Klein wasn't with us this year. And so I had a bit of a learning curve. And then you had a big learning curve, of course, because you were learning the TriCaster, which is this big switching unit that all the cameras and everything go into, and then you're responsible for what people see on the screen and then what's going on to the DVD, which of course we're and not only the DVD but onto the video on demand, that's the videos that we preserve of the talk and then share with people. So that's really, really important. I mean, that's the product of the conference are those videos. And so yeah, you did a great job with it, and I'm glad you found it fun. I thought you would. It's kind of like doing your show, of course, which is really complicated. People probably don't know. Well, they may know, but what you're doing live streaming your show is really complicated. That's why I don't do it. It's too complicated.
Well, I have help now, but you know, yeah. Before that, it was really tough.
But even with your help, I mean, there's a lot going on in the back that people don't know about, where you guys are doing that, you know, every week, making sure to put this together and putting out, fixing things that aren't working right before you go live. And, you know, you've got people in the background doing stuff right now. So,
yeah, the one thing also about you actually, it's almost like pre-editing the movie before it actually goes. I mean, you're like the camera angles and everything. It's really, I found it really fascinating. And it was a really, really fun behind the scenes. Someone posted a question here for you, Alejandro. They want to know when the conference videos will be available on the Open Minds website.
Never. Because Open Minds and the conference
UFO Congress.
UFO Congress are separate.
Yeah.
I mean, in the same sense, right now. So, because Open Minds, of course, is still a sponsor. And if you go to Open Minds, you see ads around Open Minds for the UFO Congress and for the UFO Congress store. We even have a shop link that'll take you to the store. I got to fix it. So if you go to openminds.tv and click any of those links for the UFO Congress store or the shop, because now the Open Minds store is in the UFO Congress store. So really... I don't think I'm doing a good job answering this question. My point is that now, if you want to go to openminds.tv and click any of those links, it'll take you to the UFO Congress store, and the videos are up there to purchase. Also, if you go to the ufocongress.com and go to the store, you could get there. So you could get there multiple ways, but they are available to purchase right now.
And you also have a new YouTube channel, right?
We have a new YouTube channel because we're separate, Open Minds and UFO Congress. So on our YouTube channel, we have posted the Elizondo interview that To the Stars recorded for us, which was the big thing for us, this exclusive interview with Luis Elizondo. So that you can go watch right now. And kind of this intermixing of Open Minds, in just a bit, I'm going to be posting the transcript of that interview. Which for researchers and people, especially with this, you know, you want the details of what he said so you can reference it and go back to look and remember, you know, all the details. And so I'm going to be posting a transcript real soon here after the show so people can find that at Open Minds. And I'll have a link to that from the YouTube. But yeah, there is a new YouTube. Please go check that out. And then we do have our video on demand, which also is advertised on Open Minds or on the UFO Congress store. And that's cool because, you know, everything's going to video on demand. Who even plays DVDs? Besides these conference ones, you know, I'll play them on the computer just to make sure they work and everything. But I don't watch anything, you know, on DVD anymore. I watch it streaming. So we do have this video on demand streaming where it's just a few dollars a month and you have access to hundreds of videos. And we do have up there the entire Luis Elizondo presentation. That included me bringing people up to speed. So I took about half an hour and telling people, okay, here's how this all came about. You know, here's how Tom DeLonge started, you know, brewing this kind of stuff and getting his organization together. And then when we found out that Luis Elizondo was involved in what he did, and then the New York Times story and the details in the New York Times story that are pertinent, you know, the important bullet points there. And that was important because if you just go into watching this Elizondo interview without knowing any of that backstory or at least reading the New York Times story, you're probably going to be a little lost because you won't know necessarily what he's talking about. So I gave that background to people. And then after we showed the video at the conference, we then came out of it. Nick Pope and I were on stage and Nick gave a little bit of his insight into the video, having, you know, ran a UFO investigation group for a government, the UK government, and excellent insight. He was great. He made some really good points. And then he and I went back and forth a little, and I shared a little bit of information that Elizondo had shared with me that was not in the video. And so that's what the full thing is. The full presentation was at the conference, which you can see on our video on demand, or you can buy the DVD at the store.
Now, someone just asked, what is the name of the YouTube channel that you have?
UFO Congress.
Just UFO Congress on YouTube?
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just enough. UFO Congress. If you go to YouTube and you put in UFO Congress, you're going to find it. Or if you go put in Luis Elizondo, it's at the top of the list. So super easy to find on YouTube.
And subscribe, everyone.
Because
I know how
subscribe.
Long it takes. I know you have like over 100,000 subscribers on your other channel, but it takes a real long time to build up subscribers. People don't realize that. So
it does. It takes a long time. And do subscribe, because then you'll be notified when we have other videos out. And we're going to have clips from all of these talks that were at the conference, so you can get some insight into who are these people. Because some of them you're probably like, who is that? You know, most of these people you or I have interviewed on our podcast, but some we haven't. So we'll give you insight into that. Plus, we're going to be posting awards for the videos. So we have this award ceremony, and we videotaped that. And so we'll be posting so you could see all of the awards, the Lifetime Achievement Award, the Researcher of the Year, who won the short form and the best, or the long form movies, and the People's Choice Award movies. So those are always a lot of fun, especially, I think, the Researcher of the Year and the Lifetime Achievement Awards, because those are videos that we put together where you get to learn some interesting UFO stuff, because we tell you, here's what this person has done, here's why they won the award. And in doing that, you know, you get to learn a lot about ufology and some UFO cases you probably haven't heard of.
Now, the UFO, someone's just saying the UFO on demand is not up yet, but that will be up at some point.
It is
point.
On. No, it's on. It's up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So David Turner, I said the last name. Just sorry about that. It's probably not his real name anyway.
If you go to UFO Congress, you'll see it. Open Minds, we've got tons of ads for it. But if you go to UFO Congress, there's a big ad in the middle, several UFO Congress video portal, UFO video portal, watch our video portal. So click on that and you'll get to the video portal. And the only 2018 video we have up so far is Luis Elizondo. So we have that whole presentation up on there right now. And then we've got hundreds of other videos from past conferences. We'll have more up very shortly. I'm going to be out of town next week, but by the end of this week, I'm going to have at least one more video up from 2018. I think I'm going to put up your favorite video, the Travis Walton one. You said that was your favorite panel.
Yeah.
So I'll do that one next. And then I'm going to have at least a couple of weeks. So I want to get all those 2018s up within the next couple months. So we'll have those all up very quickly. So if you subscribe, you get like a week for free to check it out. But if you stay subscribed, at least for a few months, if you want to see all the 2018, but it'll take you a long time if you want to watch a lot of those videos, because there's some really good stuff there. I mean, there's Nick Pope, there's all your favorites are up there, and more. So we've got, our Bob Lazar video up there. That's something that we can't see again.
That was people, with George Knapp, right?
Yep, with George Knapp. We have George Knapp talking about Bob Lazar also on his own up there, kind of justifying why he thinks that it's a valid case. And then, those are just a couple of our really popular ones. But Clifford Mahudi does really well, the Hopi elder.
Oh, yes.
Who did a talk a couple years ago. Yep. That's a popular talk. Paul Stonehill talking about Eurasian UFO cases is a popular one. So there's a lot of good stuff up there. Claude Swanson is another popular one, who is a theoretical physicist who talks about kind of the paranormal and the science of the paranormal, and how, you know, there are these theoretical concepts that may answer why things like ESP and things could possibly be happening. And it's related to how this could be being used by other civilizations off of our planet, and also possibly related to things even such as propulsion. And so really interesting.
Wow. That does sound very interesting. Hey, would you be up for taking a couple of calls later on? People always seem to have a lot of questions when you're on.
Yeah.
There was a question. Someone asked, they keep hearing about those metals in Bigelow's, warehouse. Have you heard any type of updates at all?
Yeah, that was one of the questions I asked. So there were two questions in particular that weren't on the video when I got it back. Because, I sent a bunch of questions from listeners. Of course, I was on your show telling people, hey, send us questions and we'll get those up there. And we did. So we sent them a bunch of questions to ask. And when the video came back, there were two in particular I quickly noticed that weren't there about the metals. That was my favorite question. And then the other question was Nick Pope's question that wasn't up there. So I told Lou, I had a little bit of time with him on the phone. I was like, there are a couple questions that I think are really important. I think there was maybe one other I asked that he said, unfortunately, he couldn't share anything. But I said, there's a couple questions here. I was wondering if you could share some information on. He said, shoot, let's do it. And so I asked the questions. One was about the metal. And actually, we had talked a little bit about it before, but he said, please don't share this yet. We're going to share it soon. And he has been sharing it. He shared it with George Knapp on Coast to Coast, and he shared a little bit. But I think he was very clear with us. And we had the most clear answer, which is they're not alloys. In the New York Times story, they wrote and they called them alloys. And he said they never called them alloys, but the New York Times said the answer was too complicated and they needed to make it somehow so people can understand. And they used the word alloys, which they felt was okay. But scientifically, when it comes down to the details, it's inaccurate, which, of course, has caused issues. So it's not an alloy. What it is, he says, is metamaterials. And from what I understand, what metamaterials are, it's just a material that is manufactured. In this case, they also have strange isotopic values. So isotopes have to do with, and whenever you find a metal, and this is the key analysis you do on a metal that you find that is allegedly from a spacecraft or something, is you measure the isotopic values of certain elements of the metal. Because when something is getting made in the process of being made, I guess somehow the isotopes line up a specific way related to the cosmic location. So the Earth, certain gravities, the gravity of the moon, the gravity of the planet, and other forces cause there to be specific values. So if you check the isotopic values, you can confirm whether or not something was made on this planet or not. And for instance, with asteroids, they'll do that to see if it's from Mars or where they might be from. And in this case, the isotopic values were unusual. They were not, they didn't indicate they were made from Earth, and they don't know where the metal comes from. And according to Lou, in order to fabricate this like as a hoax or something like that, it's just not possible that the technology doesn't exist for this thing to be created by us. So that's what he said. No information as to where it comes from. There's a lot of speculation out there. And Jacques Vallée has spoken about different metals that he believes may be from elsewhere, and so is Hal Puthoff. And Hal Puthoff, more importantly, is part of the To the Stars Academy, which Lou is part of. But he has not confirmed, nor any of them have really confirmed, where these metals came from. So we don't really know their backstory yet. Hopefully we will at some point. So it sounds interesting. I mean, metamaterials with isotopic values that we cannot. And that's the first question most people will ask. Well, have you done an isotopic analysis? And they have. And that's what it's shown.
Wow. And how can they? You can't really ever have anything like a confirmation that this has to be made off of this planet, because the elements are all the same and anything could be somehow produced here in some sort of way, even though it's strange?
That's why you have to check the isotopic values, because you have to have, because you're right, the element, all the elements come from the stars, and essentially the galaxy, the universe, we all have the same elements around. So just because you have you're not going to find, you know, the elements aren't necessarily going to be strange. However, some of the things that we have, aluminum or other things, are manufactured. And that's the important key, is that if the element or the piece that you have is manufactured, and you can check the isotopic values to show that it was manufactured somewhere other than on the planet, that's when you have something significant. That's what makes it important. You have to have that combination.
I see. Huh. Wow. And let's see, what is there was another confused or misconception, and that was the Washington Post had said something to that Alejandro had taken the videos when he wasn't supposed to, or tricked them or something. So,
yeah,
he cleared that up. What did he say exactly?
He did, and I kind of exacerbated this problem in that the Washington Post had made this claim about the medals or about the videos, and so when I was interviewed by a couple outlets, I had spoken about these are some of the questions that we need answers to, and nobody could give me these answers at the time, even though I was in contact with To the Stars and some of those guys. They were like, there's some things we're just not talking about yet. We're sorry, we can't give you more information. Although Leslie Kane and I spoke a bit about it when I did a podcast with her, and she did a bit of clarification. But Elizondo clarified this in our video. And the Washington Post had said that he kind of tricked them, that he had told them that the videos he wanted to release for educational purposes, but the whole time he had this secret agenda of using them to show that UFOs are real. He said that's not the case. That's not true. That the DOD released the videos, and it was through their department. But he said, and Leslie, I guess maybe was not aware of this, or at least this wasn't clear to her, it seems. But he said that they released the videos in order to get them out to the public, and so they can have a better understanding of what they are, essentially so that people are kind of like a citizen science thing. So people in the public could look at these videos, and then maybe someone out there could say, hey, I know what that is. That's not what you think it is. It's this. And so it was essentially to get help identifying these objects. What he claims. And he says that it was a DOD process. It went through this DOPSR process, D-O-P-S-R. So it's a military acronym for this rigorous process that material has to go through to get declassified, and then in order to be shared with the public. So it went through that entire process. It was cleared, and then it got out. And that was the reason why. He said, you can see this in the DOD documentation, that I wasn't even, you know, this was done by the DOD to get those videos out. So that's interesting. That's really interesting that they chose to interface with the public to sort of say, hey, we don't know what these are. Essentially, they're UFOs. Do any of you know what they are? And some people have some ideas, but he did share that some of the ideas they've heard, such as IR flare, just like, you know, when the sun flares, that I guess infrared cameras can do that. And he says, you know, a lot of these ideas that some people have come forward with just are not the case. We have been able to demonstrate, or at least we've ruled out some of those ideas. So at least in his mind, so far, nobody's come up with a good answer as to what is in those videos.
Yeah, and, you know, he, in the video that people can actually watch that you posted, you know, he mentions things like the reason why they're so short, and, you know, that there's still could be parts of them that are still classified that can't be released because of certain things. And, you know, everyone wants to know, and I've got a few questions already in the chat room that they want to know if actually, we have a call coming in right now. Are you ready to take a call?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. All right, caller, can you hear me? You're on the line.
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. Welcome to the show. And you, do you have a question for either myself or Alejandro?
Yes, I do.
What's your name? What's your name? Where are you calling from, first of all?
This is Phil in Michigan.
Oh, hey, Phil. How are you?
Great. I'm calling about the To the Stars thing, and I've kind of followed it from the inception, and I get the pedigree of 99% of the people that are involved with it, the physicists, the scientists that work for Skunk Works. I understand that they're all top-of-the-line guys, and I understand two-thirds of what they're doing. The part that just really, 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 really bugs me that I've not heard anybody address is what on earth is this entertainment wing of this thing? It's orthogonal to everything else they're doing. Makes no sense. Can one of you gentlemen or somebody explain that to me?
I'll let you tackle that, Alejandro.
Yeah, well, and I've talked to the guys about this, so I think you're right. I think that, Phil, you're right that, you know, nobody's come out and really explained this. And so I'm the only one talking about it, and that's and, you know, people are like, well, what do you know? You're not part of their group or anything. And I understand that. So I think that it would be good for them to kind of come out and explain this. And we're going to do a follow up interview with Elizondo, and maybe I can ask him those questions. But I'd love to get Tom DeLong on, because it's kind of he's the one who started it all. And I thought that's what you were going to ask. Why this rock star? Everybody has all these great pedigrees, but why this rock star? But it was kind of the idea here is to model SpaceX or Elon Musk, that, you know, in order to do R&D, it takes money, and it takes a lot of money. So how do you get this money? Really, the money that they've requested for people to buy shares into the company is just kind of priming the pump. But what they hope to do is have this entertainment wing help fund the R&D, kind of like Elon Musk has, you know, various programs or companies and projects that help fund, or at least funded, his SpaceX to get it off the ground. And now SpaceX, I'm sure, funds itself because they've got government contracts and contracts to, you know, fly stuff into space. So I don't know for sure if it funds itself. I'd imagine so, but maybe it still doesn't. So the idea was, this is how we can get funds in order to pay for this work. And Elon Musk, that model was their inspiration for that, at least Tom's inspiration for doing it in that manner. So people are frustrated about that. Why do we want to see some fiction? You know, his argument is that this fiction is going to be based on reality. So it will be kind of like, you know, in that way, it'll help be sharing information with people. And, you know, he probably has a point. What inspired most of us the most, at least for me, Close Encounters was a huge inspiration. But I know anecdotally out there, movies, Fire in the Sky got a lot of people interested in Travis Walton's case. So they're just hoping to use that to inspire people to seek more information, and that they'll be able to hopefully provide a lot more credible information in that manner. So that was the idea behind it. And I think they could do they should probably speak to that, or at least have that message out there so people can understand, you know, how does entertainment and UFO research go together? That's weird, and it might even be detrimental. And their argument is, no, it's helping our efforts. So,
yeah, well, that's a very good answer. But, you know, I think from my perspective, and I think a lot of other people's perspective too, they don't really need to tell the public that. I mean, they could decouple the two completely and still have the back channel funding to their primary research organization, because, you know, the appeal of investing in pure research, for me, would make a whole lot more sense than this entertainment thing. Because I have to tell you, you know, I've listened to Tom DeLonge. I heard him on the Joe Rogan show, and I was embarrassed for the guy. That was some of the weirdest, like, hour and a half interview I've ever heard in my life. And if they want to couple those two, they're shooting themselves in the foot big time. They better just take it underground if they want to do that kind of funding. But that's my own personal perspective. I'd be highly shocked if other people don't kind of feel the same way that I do. But anyway, yeah. I thank you very much for your answer. That was really good.
All right.
Yeah, I think he's just got a great point. I think that a lot of people agree with Phil, and maybe that is something they'll want to rethink. I don't know. You will notice that since the New York Times story came out, we've heard nothing from Tom, and he's not talking.
Right.
And so they've kind of identified this issue in a way, and I don't know. Maybe they're working on an answer for it, but I think that's some great.
You know, I thought I was crazy there for a while because, you know, I've been following this. I've been following this stuff from the 1970s, it is one of those things that something just wasn't right about it. You know,
I agree.
It had this weird vibe to it that, you know, because it's like, for example, I listened to George Knapp interview Luis Elizondo on Sunday. And, you know, most of that interview was rehash, but there were some really, really striking parts of that that make me wonder why that's not on the front page of the New York Times. And the last thing they need to do is to divert attention from the kind of message that he's giving with this other stuff, which here or there.
And one of the issues I've seen, and maybe you have seen this too, is that some of the UFO personalities out there have looked at Tom's stuff and they say, look, he's got the answer. And this justifies all of my wild, crazy conspiracy theories because Tom says they're real. And they're completely ignoring, you know, the more credible hard-nosed stuff that's coming from Elizondo and some of these other credible people, which is unfortunate because that's the real meat, you know, that's the real tangible stuff that you can, you know, share with the mainstream. Unfortunately, Tom his stuff is unsubstantiated.
That's true. And it really is because, you know, Putoff's interview was just mind blowing.
Yeah. It was really good.
I mean, and it's just one of those, between him and Luis, oh my God. I mean, it's like, because I'd lay in bed at night, you know, thinking about this stuff and how real it actually is now. I tell my wife about it, and she just looks at me and wonders what's going on and wonders why, you know, there's not more in the major news media. And that's really why I feel so strongly about what they've done with, you know, the whole DeLonge entertainment wing of this thing, because they're really, like, cutting off their nose to spite their face with this thing. The message, the core message that's there between Putoff and Elizondo is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's getting drug in the dirt. That's kind of the bottom line for me.
I think another argument they would make is that so far nothing penetrates the public, and they're trying new and different methods to really get their message out there to people, and that they think maybe these ideas are some of the way to get to the youth and get to more people because they feel that the credible information just doesn't have much of an impact on the public. And so they think this may be something different that tries to actually get to people, more people. So we'll see. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay, Phil. Hey, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for your answer, Alejandro.
Yes. It was Alejandro, yes.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Not me. You know, the one thing, the only thing that I, you know, want to just add to that just a little bit is the only detriment that I see, or one of the detriments I see, is that it might be confusing to the first-time person that lands on their website. Now, wait a minute. Is this UFOs or entertainment, or, you know, what is this? Is it all a mix? You know, it just might be a little confusing to someone.
Maybe, yeah.
Possibly. You know, we only have a little bit of time left here, so I will say, and we were going to talk about a number of things, but let's just address this, and if someone calls in, so the number will be up on the screen now for anyone that is listening live and they want to call in. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, Alejandro, was the Oregon, last October, I guess it was October 25th or something like that, there was FAA tapes. Have you listened to any of that? Checked any of that?
No.
Have you heard about it, though?
I've heard about it, and I've posted a story on Open Minds today, but I just have not had time to look into that.
Yeah, I've listened to it a little bit, and
it looks great. I've heard, seen some conversation. It looks like a cool case.
Yeah, it's something there that's really happening, and, you know, incredible speeds and all that. It's really, I always like hearing someone that, you know, talks like in a, anything like that, whether it's a fighter pilot or anyone that's, you know, someone from a flight tower, you know, talking about on radar. That stuff is really fascinating to me. The call in, if anyone else wants to call in and ask Alejandro a question, he's going to be on for just a little bit longer. That number, I'll say it if you're listening, and it's 603-967-4030. That's only for when the show is live. I get calls when Dark Matter is running the show sometimes. So what about, there was also a story about Robbie Williams. Did you look into that one at all?
No, I thought we were going to talk about the Congress.
Okay, yeah. No, we were. I just had, I threw you those two things too, if you wanted to talk about them. Okay.
I have no info.
That's okay. Do you want to talk about what's going to go on next year? All right. Guess what? We have a call, and I'm going to take that call. All right, caller, can you hear us? You're on the line. Please give your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Martin. This is Ryan from South Carolina.
Oh, hey, Ryan. How are you?
How you doing?
Good, good.
Oh, pretty good.
You got a question for Alejandro?
You're back in the cold weather again.
I am. It's actually very nice here. It's been in the 50s and 60s. Snow is almost starting to melt.
I have a question for either of you, and this may be getting off topic. I don't know if it is. You know, we can move on to something else. We were kind of kicking this around in the chat room. Trump. He's been president now for probably over a year. And if anyone would leak this, if any president, I mean, he seems to be an expert at leaking. If anyone would leak this, I would think it would be him. And it's hard to believe he would not be briefed on this. And so, you know, it kind of makes me wonder either one of three things are going on. Either, number one, the government, there's really nothing to this. And the government really doesn't have anything. Number two, they suspect it, but they don't have anything to brief him on. In other words, you know, we think we may be getting visited, but we don't know. Or number three, he's actually keeping his mouth closed, which is just borderline crazy. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I mean, why have there been no leaks from this administration?
I think that, you know, there's a whole bit long history here. So it's a great question. And that's what's fascinating about the ATIP program, this Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program that Luis Elizondo was part of. Because of your scenarios, we already know what we know for a fact now, for a recorded fact, mainstream for the first time now accepts that there is a UFO phenomenon. And prior to the December, we didn't have that. So scenario one's kind of shot now. Now we know that they know something. So your scenario two, we have a better feeling, is this situation, or at least publicly, officially, that's the situation, is that they're looking into unidentified aircraft, and that at least some people, including Elizondo, who ran the program, believe that we have a real phenomena here. We don't know what it is. He's very clear about that. He doesn't know if it's outer space. He says inner space or somewhere in between, but there's advanced technology that's not ours. So we know at least scenario two is the case. And I think you're right. If there was a scenario three where he was briefed, he would have probably spoken to it, especially because Hillary did. I mean, Hillary brought up UFOs, and John Podesta brought up, of course, kind of coaxed her into bringing up UFOs, and she said she would reveal information, and so it was a topic. And so I think those of us who watch politics and are also in this field, and historically, you know, politicians have been made fun of once they mention things like this, but Trump did not jump on it. He didn't jump on it and start making fun of Hillary or Podesta, and nor has he done that to this day, which is really interesting. It indicates to me he doesn't want to disenfranchise people who believe in those things, but also he perhaps doesn't have any information, or else, like you said, he would be out there about it. But it's really interesting that he's been so silent, even though kind of Hillary's camp lobbed him this softball that he could have, you know, spiked home to make fun of her, and he didn't do it. So I think that you have an interesting question, and it's an interesting, I think one of the follow-up questions, one of the things I want to ask Elizondo is, does he know, was the White House briefed on their work, especially the papers they had done? It's possible they weren't. It's possible that, you know, they were so embarrassed that they by this whole topic and that this study that they're doing, that they wanted to keep it away from the political arena as much as possible. And some of the politicians, Reid and others, kind of have suggested that we felt this was a serious thing, that we had to look into it. The public thinks it's goofy, so that's why we had to keep it very secret. And so perhaps they did just try to keep it just under wraps for as long as possible. That's another possibility. But I would love to ask Elizondo what he knows. Now, when you asked Nick Pope what the Royals knew and if they were ever briefed on his project, he says, I can't answer that question. So he's and Elizondo may have to say the same thing, that unfortunately that information is classified still and I can't share it. But great question.
But, yeah. You know, I mean, at this point, I've forgotten which scenario is one, two, or three. So mm-hmm. Hope you'll forgive me on that. But just to go to the basic, over the years, there's been all these claims about crash stuff at Roswell, crash stuff at other locations, it being extraterrestrial. And I just have a hard time believing that if those things actually happened, Trump would not have been briefed, because that is, you know, a major implication on national security. So what makes me think that kind of leads me into thinking that possibly the government has always, those crashes didn't happen, but the government suspects we're being visited, and the suspicion has not warranted briefing him on anything, because, you know, he wouldn't be able to keep his yap shut.
I think you're exactly right. I think what you just said is probably the case. Personally, I think that's the most likely case, as frustrating as that might be for some people. However, I think it's interesting what Bill Clinton said. Bill Clinton said about UFO research, he said, you know, I looked into it, I didn't find anything. But he said, I would not be the first president that career bureaucrats have lied to. So it's possible they just didn't share the information with me. I think
that he looked specifically at Roswell and found nothing. I think he got Webb Hubble to look at it.
Yeah, he looked at Roswell. He had Hubble look at Roswell and JFK. He also had some. He said he looked into Area 51, and actually during his presidency there was a big to do with a lawsuit at Area 51. So he was definitely that he had to get involved with Area 51 was something he was aware of. So he kind of alludes to that. He asked, hey, do you guys have any aliens or UFOs there or something? But yeah, it's unclear exactly everything he did to look into this topic. Of course, he did work with Lawrence Rockefeller, at least was friends with Lawrence Rockefeller, who did a briefing on the topic that he shared with the Clintons. So Clinton obviously is into the topic. Yeah, it was an interesting statement to say I could be being lied to.
I would think that when the New York Times article came out that they had to have some type of preparation for when they have those press meetings, because that topic could have come up. So they probably had to have some type of briefing for that. How much, you know, I've always thought that, and I'm still under the belief that the government really doesn't know what's going on. And that's why, you know, whether it's the part that's scary about it is if they don't know what's going on is almost as scary as if they do know what's going on, you know?
Yeah. Well, and they did ask the DOD for quotes probably early on while they were working on the article. And the article came out early December. They had been working on it probably since late October, since Luis Elizondo had came out, maybe since September. So the DOD was prepared, and the DOD did give them a quote to say that, yes, this program did exist. We did fund it from 2007 to 2012. So you're right. At that point, they knew. And they knew the story was coming out. And I think that's another interesting aspect of the story is the silence, that they have that one quote that the project existed. Otherwise, they've said nothing. And they have not disputed any of Elizondo's claims.
Right. Alejandro, thanks so much. It's been a real pleasure, and I really appreciate you spending this time with us. It's really funny. You started out in daylight, and now you're pitch black.
Isn't that funny? That's
really
kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. Thanks so much, Alejandro. And
thank you.
Yes, and I'll be talking to you next. Well, hey, have a great time. I know you have a next week off.
Yeah,
have a wonderful time.
Hey, Mark, can I leave too?
Yes, you can go too. All right. Thanks, Ryan. Hey.
Everybody, go watch that video and subscribe to our YouTube channel, please.
Nice talking to you.
Because that's free. Nice talking to you, too. And then for just a few bucks a month, you can get our video on demand. And you can find all that at UFOCongress.com. So go check it out. Thank you, Martin.
All right. Take care. All right. Our next guest is Mac Maloney, and he'll be coming right up. Hang in there. Mac Maloney, welcome to the show.
Hi, Martin. How you doing?
Good, good. So it's a real pleasure to have you back on. You're always a lot of fun. We just got to do a couple of adjustments here. And okay. So how have you been?
Okay. You know, since the last time we spoke, everything's all right. Made it through the winter.
Well, I know. It feels like spring, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. What are we? We're like, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 miles apart, something like that. And yep. We've had a ton of snow up here on the mountain. Now, you don't have any snow where you're at, but I've got about 2 feet still here. That's the way it is.
Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy. Oh, yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So, one thing I want to ask you later on in the show, would you be up for taking some calls? We can take some calls if you'd like.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. So why don't you, for the first-time listener that's never heard your scoop before, can you just give a little background? And I know you've written a whole bunch of books, a series of books, and you've written a couple of UFO books, really interesting. So if you would go over that, if you would.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, 20 years ago or so, I was working for General Electric as a PR guy, and then one day a guy walked into my office, an office mate came in and said, hey, you want to collaborate on a book about the Alfred Hitchcock TV show? So I said, yeah, sure, because I had gone to school for journalism and I went to Emerson College for writing and film production. And So we got that book published, and I was able to get an agent at that point. And I think I've written 54 books since then. And the most popular ones are the Wingman series that I started back in the late 80s, and it's still going. Number 18 just came out. And then I had the opportunity to do two UFO books, UFOs in Wartime and Beyond Area 51.
Beyond Area 51, I remember that. And that has to do with all these weird secret bases or something, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Every secret base around the world except Area 51. We found, I think there's, there's more than 20 of them. I mean, the number would surprise you. But, and they all have some kind of a UFO history to them, which is interesting, too.
And I can't remember in that particular case, but did you talk about the one, the underwater base out in off of Florida?
Yeah, it's in the Bahamas. That's called AUTEC. And that's basically the Navy's Area 51. They test a lot of new submarine weaponry there and different kinds of navigation gear and everything. But there's a lot of UFO sightings down there, a lot of USO sightings down there, and have been traditionally. So, and it's right in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, which is kind of odd, but. So the U.S. Navy built their Area 51 in the Bermuda Triangle. As crazy as that sounds, it's true.
Yep. Now, I know since you finished up your last books, do you still pay attention to the UFO topic in general?
Well, yeah, we have our own show on, Mag Maloney's Military X-Files. Run a bunch of internet networks.
Of course.
And so we're always, at least once a week we get together and talk about what's going on with current UFOs, or just kind of, stuff that's happening paranormal-wise, and then we always do like a couple of classic kind of military UFO encounter reports every week. So, we definitely kind of stay in touch with it.
Yeah, I've been on your show twice so far, and it's a blast. I mean, I don't know, you just do a lot of laughing. And there's a lot of funny things. You're not afraid to say anything on your show. It's kind of a family show here, so we don't get carried away.
Okay, message received there, Martin. I hear you.
One of the things that we were discussing, and thanks for, I don't know if I mentioned this, but thanks for coming on at last minute like this.
Hey, why not?
Yeah, that I wasn't prepared for the guest not showing up. One of the things you wanted to talk about is things that I have never heard of before, and one of them is a scare ship of 1909. What is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, when we were talking off here earlier, we were talking about, hey, what can we discuss that, a lot of people may not have heard of. And these are in, I've kind of found these researching the book UFOs in Wartime. And I came upon the story, and people had written about it before, but for some reason it was news to me that back in 1909 over England, there was a year and a half or so of people seeing these things that came to be known as scare ships. What they most closely resembled were Zeppelins, which were used in World War I, but not until 5 years later. And at the time, the Germans had just, basically invented the Zeppelin, and they hadn't even flown them off of tethers yet. They hadn't been flown independently. So these things that people saw over England were not Zeppelins. In fact, Count von Zeppelin himself said they weren't Zeppelins. But anyway, what they were these huge airships. They could fly very fast. Like a Zeppelin could fly at top speed, maybe 50 miles an hour. These things were clocked at going 250 miles an hour. They were seen all over England. There were more than one of them. A lot of times people would see them. When people would see them, they'd also see men in black on the ground. So it was really the first really recorded incident of people seeing men in black. And no one knew what they were. And they as I say, stayed for one summer in 1909. They kind of slowly faded away during that winter. People did see some in 1910, and then they went away completely. And no one ever figured out what they were, where they came from, other than the fact that they flew way faster than any kind of Zeppelin. Even today, blimps can only go about 50 miles an hour, maybe 60. These things were clocked, literally clocked from London to outlying villages, outlying towns that go in excess of 250 miles an hour.
Now, what would have have the skeptics approached that and come up with any ideas on what they thought they were, as far as you know?
Well, no. The rumors at the time were that, if you go back in history to that time, everyone just assumed that there was going to be a war between Germany and, and the British sometime. And so some people would say, well, this is really just kind of some nefarious plot by British intelligence to get people used to seeing enemy aircraft flying overhead, because that hadn't happened before in wartime, as a way to get the population ready for a war, which, you still would have had to build the things. And if you were able to build them, if British intelligence were able to build them, then they would have been way ahead of the Germans as far as, airship, construction and using airships as weapons was concerned. So I never really saw anything that, made any sense. There were airship sightings in the United States in the late 1800s, and there were airship sightings seen throughout Europe in right before World War I started, but nothing like the intensity and the frequency that people saw them over England in the summer of 1909.
It seems to me that I read something about this, possibly. Didn't some of them have lights too, or is that am right. I? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were lights.
No, that's right. They were. They had searchlights that they would shine down at the ground, very intense.
Which we didn't have at the time. We didn't have something like that.
Nothing like that. Nothing. Right. To carry something airborne way back then, everything had to do with weight. And the lighter you could make it, the better you were going to be able to fly. So, but to have these huge searchlights, and you would have generators, you wouldn't need mount places to mount the lights on the bottom of these things. But whenever people saw them, they had these really bright lights on. And then some people said, well, maybe they had spy blimps from Germany, and people would point out, well, why would you have a spy blimp with two, huge searchlights, shining down at the ground if you were trying to be, undercover or whatever, I'm not seen. But these things were so huge that they were, it was almost impossible not to see them if they happened to be flying over. And they always flew at night, too, as well.
Do you know about sound, any type of sound? All right, everyone. So that's it for the free show. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next week with a pre-recorded show. The first part of the show is going to be with Bill Burns. He's going to be talking about Tesla and Edison, actually Tesla versus Edison. In the second part of the show, you'll hear a little bit of that, is Bryce Zabel. He's a brilliant man involved in Hollywood and so many things going on. And he has some great UFO stories as well. Again, thank you so much for listening. And remember, you can support the show to listen to full shows. All you have to do is spend $2 or more a month. And all that information is on Podcast UFO. Talk to you next week. And remember to keep your eyes to the sky.